tarot cards. Would you like your cards read?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do it. Do my cards.
Okay.
I'm scared. It's going to say, bitch, you're going to die.
Shut up.
Yeah, that's what it's going to say.
Okay. Gotta mix them up really well. I don't know how you do mix them.
You know what? I told Jacinta that she needs to come on the podcast and she needs to do tarot cards with us.
Yeah. And what'd she say?
She's down for it. We just gotta set up a date.
Next.
We can't do it next weekend. Next week?
I'm off. I have a day off.
You can win today.
Wednesday.
That's it. And you wanna use your Wednesday on me?
I've done it before, boo.
Uh-huh.
I will sacrifice that day off for you.
Shut the fuck up. You're stupid.
Okay.
Yeah?
Pick three cards.
Okay. Two, Trace.
Lay them down.
I don't know.
Oh.
Can I look at them or no?
Now flip them on the table.
All right.
Do you know what card you picked first?
No.
The fuck?
How am I supposed to know what card I picked first? All right, so I got Page of Cups, I got the Queen of Cups, and I got the Knight of Cups. Why are they all fucking cups?
Bitch, I think you did it wrong.
Do it again.
You're supposed to, Okay.
Okay.
Let's.
One of us.
Okay. We're not going to do that. Okay. When you pick your card, I want you to just lay it down. Okay?
Okay.
Let me move this fucking rubbery damn thing. Okay. Three cards.
Three cards, and I got to lay it. This is the first one.
Okay.
Second one.
Okay.
Why do they have nothing on it?
Okay. These are... Whoa, you picked... Okay. With pentagrams.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
That don't sound good for me. Wait, put...
Four of Cups in tarot. Images. You see, this is a right image. Four of Cups. Okay, you picked all these upside down. They're all reversed. Okay, reversed tarot card meaning. Seizing opportunities, letting go of regret, end of stagnation? Stagnation?
Mm-hmm.
Motivation, enthusiasm, being proactive, interest, focus, self-awareness, positive focus, and gratitude. Zest for life.
Mm.
That's what that means.
I kind of like that. That kind of goes with what's going on with me right now.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. The six stars in tarot. Okay. When giving and taking are in balance, two outcomes are possible. Make your needs known and be open to the needs of others. When you do this, your love and your self-esteem will blossom. If you satisfy other people's needs by using your talents, and if your needs awaken and further other people's talents, then everyone will be a winner. Make sure that you are not simply managing or making do, but that you are striving for personal gain and common profit. Let me see.
So basically, stop being selfish. Okay. When giving and taking are in balance, too, I'm gonna make your needs known. So, and if your needs awaken and further other people's talents, then everyone will be a winner. Make sure that you are not simply managing or making do. They are striving for personal gain and common profit. So basically, I gotta make sure that I'm giving as much as I'm receiving, mm-hmm. and then as well as like vice versa.
Five stars of tarot. Okay. Five of Pentacles in tarot. Images. Five of Pentacles. Reverse. Improvement in finances. Luck. End of hardship. Positive change, becoming financially secure, recovery, outcoming adversity, paying debts, and employment.
First off, let me just tell you, I got my stimmy, so.
Yeah.
Wow. That actually sounds really fucking awesome. And it kind of seems like kind of similar to what I'm feeling right now. Like, I feel like we're like actually getting up on what we're doing. Damn. Tarot kind of freaks me out a little
bit. That's kind of creepy. And the upright one is totally opposite. Mm-hmm. Upright. Temporarily, financial hardship, negative change, feeling left out in the cold, adversity, struggle, poverty, divorce, breakup, scandal, disgrace.
I definitely don't feel that. Yeah. That's crazy.
That's crazy, right? Yes. Take a picture of your cards and show this to Justin.
Let me see what she has to say. Yeah. All right, so are we ready for our next episode? From above. All right, yeah. Let's do the butt.
Do the butt? Yeah. What's the butt?
Butte, Montana.
Butte, Montana.
All right, so it's spelled B-U-T-T-E. Ooh. The butt. Okay. Sarah's like, no, it's Butte. And I'm like, I get it, it's Butte, but it looks like butt to me.
Changed my mind.
Changed my mind. All right, so I decided to do this episode because I was talking to my assistant principal at the high school. Okay. And first off, she thinks everything that I do is really fucking weird. She tells me that I'm pretty much haunted and that I am pretty much possessed. Because she sees all the shit that I do and like all the stuff that I like. Yeah. And she's just like, you're weird.
I love it.
I hate it. But she also told me that, okay, so this is where her husband, I think she said her husband was born and raised here, or this is like his hometown, something to that significance. Bitch, stop showing your fucking, you're just so weird. okay, so she was telling me about this place, and she's like, it's really fucking haunted because it's basically based off of mining. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's
a lot of deaths in mining.
Right? Okay, but not only that, but like underneath, you know, people die in there in these tunnels.
Fuck yeah.
And they never get out.
And their souls are trapped.
Trapped there forever.
Okay, I don't get it because some people say that at graveyards, mediums and shit, mm-hmm. they find the most peace at graveyards because all the spirits are not there. They're with their loved ones. As in, these spirits do not stay with their body. They stay with the people that they love.
I would say it's based on what they went through.
Probably.
How they feel at the moment. 'Cause if you're like, I'm feeling like if you're super scared when the time that you die, you pass away. Yeah. More than likely, I feel like you're being so confused in your afterlife. You're not going to know that you're even dead, first off. So you probably think you're still in the mine. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like if it happens so traumatically, like, you don't know what's happening. You don't realize you're dead. Yeah. So you think that you're actually in your body, but you're not. You know?
You're just stuck in darkness.
This place is fucking haunted. Haunted.
Haunted as fuck.
But I would definitely go there. So yeah, so this is to, this is Haunted Butte, Montana.
Let's get her done.
Let's get her done. By the way,
Oh, by the way. What? We need to get this shit started. Yes, we
right. do. All right, here we go. Okay. Hello, everybody. My name is Sarah.
And my name is Lindsay.
And this is Ghost Running My Ass! We are a paranormal podcast. It's
just two spooky bitches.
Doing spooky shit.
Telling scary stories. And well, getting really fucking stories. Scared. Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. Drinking beers.
Getting the goosies.
Drinking beers, getting the goosies. Currently, we are drinking the Resolute Brewing Company Crispy Wiva. It is a salted lime lager. Let's give a little bit of a... How are we feeling about it,
Lindsay? I really like it.
Do you?
I like it. I mean, it tastes
like wood.
Kind of funny.
She said it tasted like wood. First off, it's not a goddamn plank. It
tastes like a plank.
This is craft beer, bitch.
It tastes limey. I don't know how to fucking explain it. I'm new to this craft beer shit.
To your palate.
My palate is not as
refined.
Refined as yours, honey. I'm
very
sorry.
True. We won't even get Fuck into you. That. Shut up. You and your Bud Light ass.
Hey.
All right. The only thing I will drink Bud Light with is Clamato.
I drink vodka way more. Vodka or wine way more than I do.
Yeah. So let me tell you about the last time Lindsay drank vodka with me.
I got, when I broke my leg.
Yeah.
Dumb bitch. Yeah, I broke my leg, dude.
Oh, so annoying. That was insane. I will never give you vodka after that. I never want you to drink vodka around me.
I fucking fell.
PTSD.
And I was going to play my video games, get some Warzone wins in. Drunk as fuck. She was trapped out on my couch. Drunk as
fuck.
Like, and I was like going to get chasers because I was just drinking the vodka by myself, I think.
Out of the bottle.
Out of the fucking bottle. I was just fucked up. I didn't give a fuck. And I ran to the bathroom. I mean, I ran to the refrigerator and my carpet like had a bump in it, whatever the fuck you want to call it. Mm-hmm. It was folded incorrectly and my leg.
Bitch ate it.
Bitch, I don't even know.
I don't even know either. All I of just a sudden. Heard,
like, oh fuck.
And I woke up forward. Real quick, didn't I?
Bitch, I fell. You were already next to me. Like, what the fuck? Got flashed in this bitch.
I just like, oh my god, bitch, damn.
You okay? Are you okay? And I was like, I'm okay. No, I don't know what I said. I don't remember.
Like, I need to get up. I need to get up.
I need to get up. I need to get up.
You need to poop for me on the
couch.
And
what the fuck did I do? She left.
And she drank more.
Like, and I drank more and I played my game. Like the young man I am.
Annoying. Anyways, let's get over that. That's PTSD. All right, so are you ready for setting the scene?
I'm ready.
All right, let's get this shit. Okay. In the 1800s, Butte, Montana was... Damn it, Lindsay. Fuck you, bitch! You're trying to be serious. It's setting the scene. We have the spooky music on. In the 1800s, Butte, Montana was a booming town filled with miners who would swarm for their own glory and the money hidden in the mountains. But many of them found nothing but death and destruction. Some never made it back out into the light of day. Their physical and spiritual bodies doomed to stay stuck in the tunnels that took their life. This week's episode, Lindsay and I will be discussing Haunted Butte, Montana, and the spirits that still haunt this actual ghost town. Here's to them. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bing. As always, we are going to get into the history of Butte. Butte is actually spelled B-U-T-T-E, which to me sounds like butt.
Booty.
The booty, Montana. So, Butte, Montana was established in 1864 as a mining camp in the northern Rocky Mountains. Butte was Montana's first major industrial city, and in its heyday between the 19th and early 20th century, it became one of the world's biggest, or one of the biggest copper boom towns in the American West. So, in 1874, a guy by the name of William R. Farton, dude, I'm not even joking, that's his
William
fucking
R.
name.
William R. Farton. That's a fucked up last name.
William L. Farton.
Oh.
Founded the asteroid mine. It doesn't matter. His last name's Farton. Who the fuck has a name named Farton? Many prospectors were attracted to the mines, and they came from all over the world. They came from England, Ireland, Wales, Canada, Finland, Austria, Italy, China, Montenegro, Mexico, and more. So many young men from these countries formed gangs to promote their territory, including the Irish of Dublin Gulch, the Eastern Europeans of the McQueen Addition, and the Italians of Meaderville. It's like...
fucking gangland up in this bitch.
Gangland, though. These are white boys getting it.
Ooh, that's like, that's kind of hot.
Turf wars.
That's kind of
turf wars. What the fuck, bitch? That is kind of hot.
Ew, I love
dude, that kind of reminds me of Peaky Blinders. You ever watch Peaky Blinders?
No.
On Netflix? Ooh, that's a badass gang, bro. They keep razors in their little...
Peaky Blinders?
They keep razors in their caps so they can cut a bitch.
That's some hardcore shit.
They're fucking Irish, dude. Irish people are crazy. So in the late 19th century, copper was in great demand and Butte was a place to find it. So three businesses fought for control of Butte's mining wealth. They were called the Copper Kings. There was William A. Clark, Marius Daly, and F. Augustus Hines. So M. Daly started Anaconda Mining in 1881, who throughout the years monopolized mining. But workers were treated unfairly, which meant they put together unions. and another number of clashes between laborers, labor organizations, and the Anaconda Company ensued, including the 1917 lynching of an executive board member, which they were of the IWWI, which is a very powerful union at that time. Bitch, did you just down that? IWWI? Yeah. Did you just down that drink?
I did, and I feel wonderful.
All right, let's do it.
No regrets. You know what they do to people like me in prison? It rhymes with grape.
You're stupid. Bitch.
I want to get on your level. I need another one.
The only other thing we have left is an IPA.
Fuck it. I have my sweet tea drowning.
I'm feeling good. Get me down. I'm feeling good. Where?
That was weird.
But so that's weird. Oh my bitch, God. What the fuck? Can I finish this?
Finish your drink.
Okay. And the 1920s, company mine guards gunned down strikers in the Anaconda Road Massacre. 17 people were shot in the back as they tried to flee, and one man died.
Anaconda Road? Was it so long Road. They called it Anaconda Road?
My anaconda don't want. My anaconda don't. My anaconda don't want none unless you got buns, hon. Who?
Got the dump truck.
Okay, so even worse, on June 8th of 1917, a fire.
That's my birthday.
Oh, listen. Okay. A fire started 2,000 miles underground in the Granite Mountain mine shaft, which spewed flames, smoke, and poisonous gas through the labyrinth of tunnels. Many men died, about 168 to be exact. The fire was finally put out and bodies were removed, but there were so many that were mutilated beyond recognition that a lot of them were unidentified.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So shit continued to be rocky between miners' unions and companies, which resulted in even many more protests, and these protests became pretty dangerous. So one protest took place on New Year's Eve, 1922, and during this protest, they tried to detonate dynamite in Hiberian Hall on Main Street. Dude, they were throwing out dynamite in this bitch. They were getting crazy.
Dude.
But in the mid-1950s, mining transitioned to open pit mining, which made things somewhat safer for miners. And although thousands of homes were destroyed in the Meaderville suburb and surrounding areas for the Berkeley Pit, which opened in 1954, it's an open pit.
Yeah.
They ended up closing pretty much soon after they opened due to the economy. Currently, there are only 14 headframes which still remain in Butte today. Headframes are like the things that kind of like keep the tunnel open so that you can mine in it. So, but back to the miners. The influx of miners gave Butte a reputation as a wide open town where any vice was obtainable. The city's saloon and red light district was called The Line or The Copper Block, which was centered on Mercury Street. The brothels they had described as elegant were, like, bountiful. Really? And there was this very famous brothel called the Dumas Brothel. Fun fact, breweries in the area opened in the 1870s and became one of the city's staple for their economy. Right?
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Also, another fun fact, Evel Knievel is a native Butte resident. And they even have Evel Knievel Days, which occur in the last week of every July.
Oh, wow. All
right, so like I said, this place is fucking haunted.
Yeah.
All right? So it's this place called the Old St. James Hospital. It's very similar to the Old Yoakum Hospital. Meaning, like, it was open at some point, and then they closed it, then they made a new hospital in a different place.
Oh, okay.
Because it was so bad. So this place is located on 314 West Park Street. And a lot of websites I visited for this particular place didn't state much about its history, but many of them very much made sure to comment on how haunted this old building is. And this comes from one blog I found. They're called The Flying Okapi, which gave me a little bit more in-depth history and feeling about the place. That's what they said.
Let's hear.
This place has given me more creeps to even, gives me the creeps to even write about. It might as well be the most haunted place in town. It was Butte's hospital until the 50s, And after multiple attempts to reuse it as housing, offices, etc., it was abandoned. When it was converted into apartments, tenants claimed to hear random hospital sounds and see doctors rushing around the halls at night. That apartment in Denver lasted only 2 years. My history teacher, Mr. Bergman, told our class a very creepy story about this experience when he was a kid. Long story short, he accidentally walked into the abandoned building thinking it was a doctor's office. He saw that the first floor was completely deserted, but he heard something on the second floor, so he went up to check it out. He reached a very busy hospital wing and talked to some nuns who tried to help him find a doctor he was looking for. When none of them had heard of the doctor, he thanked them and left. Later, he went back with his mother, who didn't believe that he had spoken to someone in there, and found that the second floor to be the same as the first, completely deserted. 20 years later, he was looking at an exhibit about old hospitals and found a picture of the St. James Hospital from 1931 with the same nun that he saw that day staring right back at him.
Oh.
Bro, I got some chills.
Totally Yoakum vibes.
Right? And I agree 100%. This is exactly like Yoakum. This hospital was once active until they closed it down and rebuilt a new one, which is still an active hospital to this day. A little background history of the hospital can be found on the St. James Hospital website, official website. And I quote, "The sisters traced their origin as a religious community to the 1600s in France, where Vincent de Paul and Louise de Maric established the Daughters of Charity. These religious women were dedicated to serving the sick and poor, and their motto was the love of Christ impels us." Isn't that weird, dude?
So weird.
So St. James Healthcare has played an important part in the history of the Butte region. They were founded in 1881 by the Sisters of Charity of Leavenworth, Kansas. St. James has been known for generations for its mission of compassionate care and service to the poor. And for more than 120 years, St. James has provided care for the sick and served the poor. So there are still various reports of paranormal activity from former and current residents. Objects would move around by themselves or vanish altogether, and screams and moans would come out of the basement where insane patients were sometimes locked away in. A former operating table theater was used as a playroom for children, and there are reports of a white apparition that has been seen staring at people from within this room before vanishing. There's also a rumor that late at night, a light shines from a window, which looks to be a candlelight. Lori Johnson of Mining City Paranormal said, "I do know people who have been in there, and they say it's very scary. They hear voices and things are moved around." So here's one more experience I was able to find about the hospital from hauntedhovel.com. There's no author for this one, so it's just kind of like anonymous, I guess.
Okay.
So, there is an old vacant boarded-up hospital in my hometown of Butte, Montana. When I was about 16, a group of my friends and I decided we were going to go inside, aside from it being locked and boarded up. A bunch of high school kids who live in an old mining town, who could resist, right? Yeah. As we climbed the gate and got inside, we were walking around when we heard something coming from the room about 5 doors down. I believe we were on the old maternity ward due to some old cribs that were left behind. We thought we heard someone coming up from the hall, and automatically assuming there was a security guard on shift or maybe a homeless person staying there, we hid under what I would think was used to be a nurse's station desk. As myself and 4 other decently sized teenage kids were huddled under the pretty big desk, we heard the footsteps get closer up the hallway and sounded like they stopped at our desk. After what seemed like forever, probably only a minute or so, my friend decided she would stick her head out from the corner and see what it was. Well, when she did that, there wasn't anything there.
What the fuck?
At all. We all kind of laughed it off and decided we would keep on with our little adventure, running in and out of rooms and pretending to be doctors and playing with the wheelchair we found in an old closet. First off, that's fucking dumb. Okay. So we were pushing each other down the hall in the wheelchair when I decided I was going to sit in it, and my friend shunned me down the hall, and I had my hands in the air laughing and making race car sounds when it felt like I ran smack into a brick wall, and the chair kind of spun out and flipped, and I ended up with a busted open lip and a good lump on my head. But the thing was, there was nothing in the hallway that could have possibly made me crash like that.
I don't understand how they can continue after the footsteps stopping at the desk that they were hiding it under, you know?
Bitch, I don't know either.
White people crazy.
So.
I'm just, you know, I don't know if they are white, but.
Bitch, I was thinking the exact same thing, but I wasn't going to say it.
Yeah.
So after a few hours, we decided we were going to head out to make it home by curfew. And on our way back out, we had stopped by that nurse's station desk because my friend realized he had left his phone somewhere. So we walked around looking for it, and when I called it, and it was sitting behind a portion of the desk, which was almost like a built-in bookshelf. But the weird thing was that there was a good amount of dust collected on the desk, and none of it was moved, nor was there any indication that his phone was tossed or dropped, but more like it was perfectly placed there, and his battery level was dropping from like green to less than 5%.
The fuck?
First off, that's fucking creepy.
That is creepy.
All right, so then there's the Butte Silver County Courthouse, which is located at 155 West Granite Street. Historically, this part of town was a place where the Butte County Courthouse and jail has always stood, like from the beginning of the town. So the original courthouse was a structure that was built in 1908 and was deemed a little too funky and ratty looking for the booming, rich mining town of Butte. So a new and grander courthouse was started in 1910, and it was built upon the same lot where the old one had stood. Mm-hmm. It was finished in 1912, and today it is this impressive-ass courthouse that is, like, uses an office space for county government employees and officials. The modern jail was built across the street just to the east of the building. So the Silver Bow County government has occupied this site since Montana has been a state and has seen multiple executions. So between 1889 and 1926, 10 men faced the hangman in the jail yard.
Holy shit.
One man stands out amongst the rest, and his name was Miles Fuller, and he had been convicted of murdering a man by the name of Henry Gallahan. So Fuller was an elderly and feeble prospector who never admitted guilt. Nevertheless, he met his demise through hanging. It's said that when his body dropped, a loud and ominous thunderclap punctuated the air. As an exclamation of his innocence.
Yeah.
Bro.
That's creepy.
I think that means that he didn't fucking do it. When they replaced the old building with the present one in 1910, deputies claimed to see Fuller in the sleeping quarters of the jail. Others reported seeing a shadowy figure, and many of them have never seen Fuller, but could describe him down to a T, all the way down to his long beard and his tattered hat.
They were seeing him.
So cold spots have been felt in the ground floor offices, and doors have opened and shut by themselves. After hours, the elevators are known to go up and down without having any occupants on the inside. Workers report footsteps echoing through the hallways, books falling off of shelves, and a shadowy figure wandering through the empty spaces. He is said to turn abruptly and walk through doors. Whoever this may be, whether it's Fuller or not, it appears that the spirit follows the old floor plan of the former building, says the historic preservation officer's Mark Rebus. So, fun fact, the pieces of the gallows are still located in the old courthouse. The last hanging was in 1926, and they still put the pieces together to show the grim history of the hanging gallows to the public.
The fuck?
Right? They just have it, like, hidden in the back.
Whoa.
In storage and some shit. Just fucking hanging planks.
Ugh!
Dude. That's too much. So then we have Mount Moriah Cemetery, which is located at 2415 South Montana Street. It's established by the Silver Bow County Masons in 1877. The Mount Moriah Cemetery is one of three cemeteries located on Montana Street in Butte County. Butte, Silver Bow County. 58 acres in size, and this historic cemetery is well maintained and has approximately 14,430 dead people.
Damn.
So beginning in the 1970s, the cemetery began to be visited by a man in a wheelchair. A man who, it transpires, has never really been there. Though many witnesses state that they have seen him, The first known witnesses to experience anything at the Mount Moriah Cemetery were two police officers in the 1970s. They were patrolling the property one night when they both saw someone in a wheelchair pass through the locked gates of the cemetery. They even ran over to the gate to see if whoever it was needed help.
Yeah.
The wheelchair-bound spirit disappeared. So.
That's weird.
Some creepy shit. But who would have thought cemetery was haunted? Since then, many other people have reported seeing the ghosts in the wheelchair in different parts of the cemetery, both during the day and at night. And that's the cemetery.
The fuck?
I would go. No. Maybe. Why?
No.
Tell me why.
Because. Okay. Because I don't feel like. Because, like I said, cemeteries, there's really nothing there. Half the time. There's really nothing there. And I remember when we would go and fucking out to cemetery. Oh, well, not you, but.
I'm sorry. Not me. Yeah. Your other woman.
Yeah. Because we would go out fucking 2 in the morning. 2 or 3 in the morning. There was nothing there.
It's and you never like, felt anything?
Mm-mm. Of course, we would, like, hype each other up and be like, ooh, like that, and scare, like, fake scare. But, yeah. I mean, cemeteries aren't really that scary.
Who was it whenever, I think it was us, like, went out to the cemetery, the Catholic cemetery?
Oh.
It was you and Crystal and Jocelyn, maybe?
Uh-huh.
And it was Anna Maria, too.
Yeah.
And remember Jocelyn was like, oh, my God, I saw somebody running through the cemetery.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's always, yeah, it's different when you're with a group of people because you're like, oh, did you see that? Did you see that?
Hyping yourself up.
Yeah, hyping it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but other than that, it seems cemeteries are pretty much really peaceful.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. It depends on what kind of cemetery and what's been done in the cemetery, I think, that kind of really matters. Because if you have, like, a cemetery where someone's gone in there and, like, done, like, some kind of spells or rituals or something.
That's true.
Because they think that they're badass or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that kind of just, like, dampens it a little bit and kind of takes it away that.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Mm. Alright, so now we have the Copper King Mansion, which is located at 219 West Granite Street. The Copper King Mansion is also known as the W.A. Clark Museum, and it is a 34-resident, Romanesque revival Victorian architecture house.
Damn.
Yeah. It was built from 1884 to 1888 in Butte, Montana. Okay. And it was the residence of William Andrews Clark, which is one of Montana's 3 famous copper kings. So the home features a fresco painted ceilings, elegant parquets of rare imported wood, gas, and electric chandeliers, which is really rare at that time.
Yeah.
There's ornate hand-carved fireplaces and stairways and a stained glass window.
Do you have a picture of it?
Yes. So the mansion was eventually sold to the Catholic Church and it became a home for the town's Catholic nuns who turned part of the top floor into a chapel. The nuns didn't appreciate the fresco, which was painted on the ceiling of the master bedroom, so they painted over it. And the mansion was put back on the market when the nuns moved out some years later, and it stood vacant for about 3 years. So the new owners started to clean out the cobwebs, dust it up, make it look good, bring it back to its former glory. While the owners were able to buy some of the original antiques that were owned by the Clark family, many other antiques are similar to the ones which existed in that era were purchased. Also, the owner loved to have collections, which today are still there on display, which include dolls, hats, toys, clocks, some kind of cup, and steins.
So, like, offerings?
I guess. First off, they're having a lot of antique shit that's in this house, so I feel like that's...
Yeah.
I feel like you're bringing shit in with that.
Yeah.
Though the very personable owner of this bed and breakfast mansion stated that there are no entities in this absolutely glorious mansion, others have reported the feeling of a presence of a cold entity hanging around in the game room.
Was that you? No. What was that?
Bitch, was that you?
No!
Yes, it was. Why are you laughing?
Me. I'm just kidding. It was me.
I fucking hate you. Stop scaring me! I'm getting scared.
I didn't expect to make that noise, but when you were like, I was like, oh, shit, I scared her.
You fucking asshole. I'm getting scared. So there's a cheery presence that's felt in the old chapel and ballroom and can be a bit of a tease with people who are fearful of spirits. A former tour guide would fit the bill pretty well. Mm-hmm. And among all the tour guides, she was the one who was picked to be the recipient of the entity's antics. Imagine being picked on by a fucking ghost. Bitch. I'm gonna find me another job.
I'll lose my shit.
Ew, especially if they touch you. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't handle that. Mm.
The other day. No. Like 2 days ago. No, it was before we had prisoners. Within the week, whatever. It was empty. Huh. Somebody just left. Well, it was fucking empty. The fucking volume was up. I shit you not, I heard the fucking door close to the jail cell. It was wide open. I looked up. Wide open. And I was like, oh my god, are we fucking going back to this shit? Like, I haven't heard shit in a while. Mm-hmm. Haven't seen shit in a while.
He said, oh, you forgot about me, bitch? Yeah. I think not.
Surprise, motherfucker.
Extra fries, motherfucker.
All rise, motherfucker. Dude, like, yeah, and I was like, oh no. So I just turned the fucking volume all the way down, put on Hulu.
Why do they do that shit?
I don't know, dude. It was fucking weird. And it was in the cell one where somebody said there was somebody underneath him. Oh! Yeah. That gets me every time. I'm like,
oh. I have a really good story to tell you. First, let me get rid of butt.
Okay.
Of the butt.
Get rid of the butt.
Yeah, let me get through the Butte, Montana one. Okay. Yeah. Then I'll tell you. Remind me.
Girl.
You're going to forget.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to forget too. All right. So a light colored hazy fog like apparition likes to float around the basement and the first floor hallway. In the top floor in the 64 foot ballroom, the owner had cleaned out an old trunk one morning, leaving it shut. During an afternoon tour, this tour guide, who used to give tours to the public and guests, was explaining about the ballroom area, and the lid of the trunk flew up all by itself, scaring the tour guide and startling the other people. This tour guide seemed to be the one the entities enjoyed getting their chuckles from, because this person reacted so beautifully, being a little scared of ghosts, which, honestly, same. So since the house is a bed and breakfast, you can stay in one of the many rooms, or if you're not up for that, you can just always give the house a tour, which I would.
Damn.
I would totally do that. All right, so then we come to the Dumas brothel. Do you know what a brothel is?
Yeah, it's where you fucking have ale and you have bitches the book.
So this brothel was located at 45 East Mercury Street. The Dumas brothel was once a very famous bordello, which means like they have women of the night. The brothel was founded by French Canadian brothers in 1890 and then was named after the owner, which her last name was Dumas, and it was one of the brothers' wife. It grew considerably through the years, with the miners employed by the city's copper mines often patronizing the establishment because they got the money and they needed their dick sucked, so they went
and
did their business. I'm not going to hate on them for that. After several changes of the madames, you know what a madame is? Like a pimp.
Okay.
It's like a female pimp. And continuing pressure from the authorities, the brothel closed in 1982. Lindsay.
That's not that long ago.
No, it's not. And it's described as a rare, intact commentary of social history. At the time of its closure, it was the longest operating brothel in the United States, having operated years after prostitution was made illegal. After closing, the brothel changed hands several times, eventually becoming a tourist attraction owned and managed by a series of Butte residents. So the Dumas Brothel Museum is a two-story brick building at the north side of the East Mercury Street in the historic city of Butte. It also includes a basement level containing tunnels. Lindsay, tunnels.
Fuck that.
There is a single-story addition that was added to the rear of the main structure in 1912, and this leads directly into the infamous brick-lined Venus Alley, which was once the hub of the Butte's red light district.
Dude, I bet they smuggled a whole bunch of shit in
there. A whole bunch of shit. So the original structure features original vaulted skylights, and the upper level is surrounded by an interior balcony which still provides a bird's eye view for onlookers to glimpse the suites or the cribs below. The basement afforded much more basic accommodations and was built to connect the Dumas to Butte's business corridor via a tunnel system. So it was like their secret little, you know. By 1900, the brothel was occupied by a Madame Grace McGinnis, her servant, and a Chinese cook, and four prostitutes. So the cost of sex in the brothel at the turn of the 20th century was 50 cents, with the working girls receiving about 40% of that amount. So what's 40% of 50 cents?
Bro, that ain't shit.
That ain't jack shit.
Holy crap.
Despite the size of the brothel, by 1902, Madame McGinnis had only five working girls and a musician under her employment. In 1903, the Dumas and businesses like it in Butte's red light district was unusually lucrative ventures, which means they were getting a lot of fucking money. These businesses were frequented by miners from the local Anaconda Copper Mining Company. And that year, traffic grew to a point where the Dumas' operations had to be expanded to the basement of the house. There were several ways potential clients could access the brothel. You could go through the back door, which was kind of the busiest section, so you really didn't want to go through there. There was the basement that you could go to. It was accessed by a staircase from the front sidewalk. And even though the Dumas operated 24 hours a day, with several girls taking three shifts, by 1910, there were only two women reported to be actually living there. Instead, the prostitutes lived in other parts of the Pleasant Alley and commuted to the brothel for their shifts. So it's like an everyday job. You know, you're just clocking in, ready to get, you know.
Dude. Okay. I couldn't imagine not living in the house that you work at, because if you're on the street and somebody sees you or notices you. What if they want to fucking rape you? They get snatched up.
Snatched up like a snack.
To their trek. To their job. To go get pounded. Ew.
That's sad. I mean, but hey, man. I mean, I guess that was like the...
But then the downside, that's your place. That's where you live. I'm sure they fucking just barged... People just barge into their rooms and like try to take them, you know?
Dude, I would hate that. Oh. That's scary time. Scary time to be living in, you know? So it was a three-level brothel. It was very well designed. I mean, it was meant for a lot of people. Yeah. The main room had larger rooms and parlors that were connected by massive pocket doors, which could be opened to create large parlors for parties, but closed up again to regain the individual rooms. So they were ready for everything and anything. Yeah. There are large windows along the main hallway where the choices of different women were on display for a man to choose from. To Damn. Have his sexual urges satisfied.
Girl, you know they still have that in Japan.
Prostitutes? China. Prostitutes?
Bro, they have like a fucking love alley.
Well, they have it in Amsterdam. And they're
displayed and pick your girl.
They have it in Amsterdam.
Did they really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Amsterdam has Amsterdam, you can do, like, a whole bunch of drugs there. It's legal.
Bro.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
And there's, like, a prostitution, like, I think blocks of prostitution. Like, just women, like, in windows, like, dancing for you and shit.
Damn.
I only know this because of Killing Eve.
Oh, my God.
Bitch, shut up.
I thought you, like, really fucking knew because,
well,
like,
man, I know, but in Killing Eve, Villanelle does this really sexy thing.
I remember, and then she fucking kills that guy.
She skins him. I mean, well, she doesn't skin him. She, like, guts him like a pig.
Yes.
Oh, she was wearing that pig costume. Oh. Oh. continue on. So, in 1971, the Dumas brothel was bought by a woman with both a heart and a head for business. Her name was Ruth Garrett. She considered herself to be a landlady and took care of her girls, standing up for them. She made sure that her employees were safe and were not abused by the men. But she had suffered a very abusive marriage herself. And she shot her husband in 1959 after receiving a terrible beating from him.
Good riddance.
But she was found for manslaughter. And served 9 months in jail. And It was supposed to be a four-year sentence, but she's only served 9 months.
That's not bad.
It's not bad at all. So when the brothel finally closed, it was the longest operating brothel. It operated for 92 years.
Damn.
Yeah. So no matter how well the sex workers were treated, it wasn't a happy life. Living and working in the oldest profession in most cases, in a brothel, it is in fact the most dangerous for the woman's health, unwanted pregnancy, complications of opium-induced abortion, venereal disease, that's your STDs, or even murdered by a jealous client or boyfriend. Mm. Entities that die unexpectedly on the job sometimes continue in their profession, not letting death get in the way. So basically, ghost hookers.
I hate you.
ghost hookers. I mean, what can we say? Ghost hookers.
Do your thing.
Do your thing, chicken wing. So the remains of a blood-stained handprint can be seen on an inner wall of one of the rooms.
Wow.
It has a badly damaged door jamb, which suggests that a violent entrance was made by somebody.
Ooh.
This was discovered in the basement, where they had their little rooms that was unsealed by one of the owners. It was very possible that a prostitute was killed in her room, where she worked, by a crazy client, a family member, or an irate brothel collection supervisor or jealous boyfriend. Prostitution was hard on the heart as well. These soiled doves, quote-unquote, were trapped in the lowest of society's occupations. Unless one of their clients fell in love with them enough to marry them, despite their sordid past. I mean, who is wanting to marry a prostitute, man? They often didn't find the peace and relief from grief or disappointment on the other side and remained restless in this world, still feeling shame for what they had did to themselves and what was done to them because of the choices they made in their life. I agree with that, yes and no. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can say, yeah, maybe they would feel shame of what they did, but at the same time, like, that was their way of living. They knew nothing else at that point.
Mm-mm. It's the only way they could survive.
But many prostitutes killed themselves, Lindsay.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
I mean, you don't find a husband. You don't have a family.
Disowned. Nobody really cares.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes
you make great bonds with the sisters you end up.
Yeah.
You know, but.
And that's not the same, though. That doesn't really help. No, I don't think. I mean, it's hard living, dude. Yeah. Who would want to do that? I mean, unless you're like. I don't know. I mean, but some of them actually died because of, like, they were trying to medicate their emotional pain, you know? So, at this time, medication wasn't regulated. I mean, it was very easy to do, you know what I'm saying? Madame Eleanor Knott of the Dumas Hotel, 1955. She fell in love with a married businessman in 1955. They planned to run away with each other. And the morning they were supposed to run away, he lost his nerve, changed his mind, and never came to pick her up. Eleanor was so devastated and lost hope of ever leaving her situation, so she killed herself. Very sad. A young prostitute by the name of Sarah, no relation, worked at the Dumas brothel during 1917. She and a client, but also her beloved minor named James, made plans to get married. James sent her a love letter that was on display in Sarah's room. The day after she received the letter, James was killed in a mine explosion. Sarah fell to pieces and either accidentally overdosed on or deliberately killed herself, probably with her favorite opium-based drug.
Damn.
After people die, they sometimes choose to visit or reside in places that brought them much joy and pleasure in the world. Many male entities and minors seem to like to relive their special recreation time with their favorite lady in the basement.
Oh my God.
The French prostitute Sandra, it seems she was good enough to be a hands-on sex therapist and made a career out of her work, finding personal fulfillment and pleasing so many of her customers. Sandra was very popular with both minors and the well-to-do, and she retired at the age of 61. She was a caring, loving woman who saw a purpose in her work. When owner Jason Geik walked into the structure, he saw smoky mists and heard disembodied voices in the first floor areas. On a tour, a latched door unlatched itself in front of a group of witnesses. People have experienced a strong aroma of cigar smoke, especially on the first floor, which probably are the dudes. So back to that French prostitute. Mm-hmm. People have been tenderly touched, and their hands have been held by a small unseen hand of a friendly woman entity. Hey, if she want to go lower. Damn. If she want to go lower, I mean, I'm not going to stop her.
You got 50 cents.
So the entity of Madame Eleanor Knott, which is... Bitch, stop doing that. You're scaring me. So, right after she died, the prostitutes and staff of the brothel saw her apparition walking the hallways carrying her suitcase. Many clear pictures of the entity of Eleanor have been taken of her throughout the years. And she also seems to have a strong protective spirit of the building who encourages and leads the others as well. So when Ruby and Jason Geik were the owners, the Dumas Brothel Museum was broken into by three youth. First of all, they grabbed some stuff from the antique photo shop in one of the first floor parlors. When they started up the staircase to the second floor, they stopped in their tracks by an avalanche of flying china dishes. The frightened thieves did an about face and made a hasty retreat out the back door. Eleanor probably led the other spirits in the dish throwing effort.
Get the fuck out.
Trying to keep her place safe, man. Mm-hmm. So the entity is Sarah. She became very active after the new owners began their massive renovation in 2013, starting in the basement. She was so fucking upset, along with the other spirits in this building, with these new people in their house. And at the work being done, I mean, who the fuck would want that? Yeah. They're messing with their shit, scrutinizing their personal objects. Something in her belongings that was unsealed 20 years ago now acts as an environmental trigger. So basically, if you bring this thing into her area, she's going to act on it, you know, causing her to be even more restless. Sarah's paranormal activity is experienced by the new owners and scared pretty much the pants off of them, dude. Yeah. They think that the spirit is very unhappy and they want to, these owners at least want to know, like, what's going on? Why is she feeling like this? What can we do to make her not unhappy? Because it's very adamant. I mean, it's very apparent that you can see that she's pissed off or whatever.
Was that good?
It was very good. I make the best micheladas ever, bitch. The best. So, one male entity was caught on a photo by an investigator wearing a mining outfit, including a bandana and a very hard dick.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding.
What the fuck?
Imagine seeing a ghost like walking around with a fucking erection. I mean, that's where you would see it at a fucking brothel.
Just a ghost dick.
Who knows?
Oh my god.
So near the basement door that led to the tunnels that
that reminds me of that one time when we were all talking. I think it was me, you, and Crystal maybe, and talking about naked ghost. And I said, I don't think I've ever seen a ghost ass before. And you were like, I don't know what the hell we were talking about. Something about ghosts dying. It depends on how you die. You see them naked. I've never.
If you die in your sleep and you're butt ass naked, you're going to come back as naked.
You reckon?
I reckon.
Oh, shit.
So that's why
I need to put some. I feel bad for my people.
So I need to put some clothes on, bitch. At least wear some chonies or something.
That's ew. I don't like that.
Cochina. So near the basement door that led to the tunnels that ran through the red light district, another photo by an investigator caught two apparitions, a male entity and a female entity, and they were fucking.
You fucking troll. You're a fucking troll. You're stupid.
Going at it! Doggy style!
Oh my god.
Alright, so the male entity was standing on the right looking down at the female with a large hair style, or like she was wearing a hat. Mm-hmm. And she was like going down on this motherfucker, like just sucking that ghost dick.
Gog 3000.
Glug, glug, 3000. Shut up! So there's also female entities in the basement, and apparently they're still turning tricks, man. Perhaps one of the women that is there.
I'm sorry. Oh my god.
Clock, okay. 3000.
Okay.
I mean, maybe there's only one female entity, but the fact of the matter is, they caught this one standing next to the man, next to a man or something, mm-hmm. and they're pretty sure they were getting it wrong. I don't know.
Okay.
So then there's two EVPs of a female entity that were caught in the basement, agreeing with an unflattering quip said by an investigator about politicians. I mean, prostitutes making jokes about politicians. Yeah. What the fuck did they know? I mean, that's hating, but I mean.
That's fucked up. Some of them, I'm sure, are very smart.
I'm not saying they're dumb. All right. So this is what my my assistant principal sent me. She sent me this link. And she was, like, asking me today, actually. She was like, did you like, look at that link I sent you? And I was like, no. And she's like, that's the last time I send you anything. You know what? It is what it is. So what? Okay, so this is called Montana's Urban Legends. It's called Anaconda's Baby Graveyard.
Okay.
Here it goes. This is from Paranormal Montana. .blogspot.com. I heard an interesting story about a baby graveyard in Anaconda. At this site, which is near a hill, if you put a car in neutral, the car will roll by itself up a hill near a quote-unquote baby's graveyard. One person is said to have put baby powder on the trunk, and after the car stopped rolling, tiny baby handprints were seen in the powder residue. I remember I had heard something like this before, but in a different state, so I did a little digging, and I found this this is a story that is found in many places around the U.S., yeah. An urban legend told at least since the 1970s, perhaps originating on a gravity hill in San Antonio, but explained by a horrific incident in 1938 in Salt Lake City, which is true. I mean, you know about that.
The children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it kind of goes into about San Antonio and like what happened there and stuff like that. Yeah. But, you know, that's pretty much it. Who knows? I mean, maybe it's true. Maybe it's not true. But yeah, it definitely gives me some San Antonio vibes.
Yeah, for sure. I've never actually done that, by the way. Have you?
I have.
Did it work?
No. I mean, it did. It did.
There was actually tampering, so.
No, but our car did move. You can't go there now because it's, like, really bad. Like, you don't want to go there because it's, like, gangs and stuff. You'll get, like, robbed or something. Mm. Yeah. I went 1 year with my uncle, my aunt, my cousin, and me. And we were in a big-ass Suburban. And it was me and my cousin in the back. We're at, like, the last seat. We're like, yeah. Oh, we're going to be so fucking bad. We're going to be really close to these ghosts. As soon as my uncle put that shit in neutral, our asses jumped over fucking, like, we were like, nah, we ain't gonna sit in the back. We gotta go in the front. We're gonna get up front. Yeah, we got really fucking scared. But, I mean, we moved. I mean, we went over the fucking railroad tracks, dude.
Wow.
But I heard that was already debunked, though. I don't think it's true. Mythbusters. You ever seen that show? Yeah. I think Mythbusters already, like, debunked that it's, like, it's an optical illusion. It looks like it's going up, but it's actually going down. You know what I'm saying?
Huh.
I don't know. It's weird. But, anyway, so that's Butte, Montana. Haunted Butte, Montana.
Haunted booty.
Anyways.
The Anaconda Road.
I doubt my assistant principal is ever going to listen to this, but thank you, Miss McDonald, for giving me this, amazing thought.
Yeah.
And this is a good episode.
For sure. A lot of laughs.
A lot of laughs.
Oh my god. You're a troll, I swear.
You're a troll.
Bro, you say the dumbest shit. Oh my god.
That's what makes this podcast so much fun, Lindsay Ann. If you didn't have me, what would you do?
It is fun. It is really fun. I feel like we need to adventure out more and go to more haunted places.
Lindsay, for my birthday, let's go to San Antonio.
I'm broke, B.
I'm broke too, but we can go. I'll pay for it.
You're not gonna pay for shit. I'll pay for it.
I'll pay for it.
Shut up.
Yes, I will.
We'll discuss this after.
After? Okay. Okay.
Okay. She's not paying for me anyway, by the way.
I'm gonna pay for it.
No, you're not.
Fuck what you say. I don't give a fuck.
Oh my god.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. You can email us at ghost. That's ghost.demyass@gmail.com. I didn't have to look that shit up because I memorized it.
I memorized it too because I said it last episode.
And please follow us on Instagram at ghostdema. I put up some really fucking funny ass memes.
Your memes are hilarious.
I
swear.
I am so fucking stupid.
Meme game strong.
Meme game strong, bro. But thank you guys. Let us know what you want to listen to, what you want to hear. We got a couple more episodes up our sleeves, but we're always up for
new ideas.
New ideas. Let's do some interviews. You want to do some interviews? You got some spooky stories? Give us a holla.
For sure, for sure.
All right, y'all. We all stay spooky. Stay clean.
Peace. Peace.
Peace out.